I'm Nathan Rutherford, and welcome to Myth Madness. Last episode, I covered Heracles' first six labors for the Mycenaean king, Eurytheus. Heracles came to Eurytheus' palace following the advice of the Oracle of Delphi. He was tasked to serve the king, and once his labors were complete, he would be forgiven for the murder of his family. The king, Eurytheus, was not an ally of the Greek hero. In fact, the quests he gave Heracles were deadly, difficult, and designed on purpose for the hero to fail. But of course, this was Heracles, the very talented son of Zeus, and he did not fail, although Eurytheus declared that two of those six labors didn't count. In two cases, his first two labors, he had to kill a monster. First, it was the ferocious Nemean lion, and second, the man-eating, head-regrowing Hydra. The next three labors were very similar. Heracles was tasked with capturing some special creature. Finally, the sixth was a weird one, cleaning some very dirty stables belonging to another king. All six were supposed to be located in southern Greece, relatively close to Mycenae. For his next labors, Eurytheus would send him to other parts of Greece, and even to the edges of the world itself. Those are the focus of this episode, along with some side quests Heracles completed along the way. Heracles' first labor outside of southern Greece was a return to the same kind of tasks he had already completed, to go somewhere and capture some great animal. But this time he had to go to Crete and capture the Cretan bull. We've actually already encountered this bull, back in the episode on the Cretan king Minos. Years previously, Minos sacrificed to Poseidon and prayed for a particularly fine bull to appear and show that the king had the god's favor. In exchange, Minos promised to sacrifice the bull once it appeared. Out of the depths of the sea, Poseidon delivered a magnificent bull to Minos, but the king decided to not sacrifice such a beautiful creature. Instead, he put the bull with the rest of the cows in his herds and sacrificed one of the others in his place. Poseidon was not pleased. If you're going to make a promise to a god, you'd better honor it. Minos had double-crossed the great ruler of the sea, and for his insolence, Minos would have to suffer the consequences. Poseidon drove the bull wild. It could not be controlled, and it broke out from wherever Minos kept his herds of cattle and began to rampage through the Cretan countryside. Heracles was sent to track it down and bring it back alive. I'd like to tell you about some trap Heracles set to catch the bull, or how he ran through the Cretan countrysides attempting to catch it. If you look at examples of Greek vase art from 550 to 500 BC, Heracles sometimes tackles the bull, putting his arms around its neck. Sometimes he grabs it from behind and throws a rope around its horns. So it seems either way that he wrestled the bull into submission. Unfortunately, the literary sources do not give specifics. Diodorus and Apollodorus just say that he got King Minos's permission to catch it, and then was successful in doing so. Diodorus does go on to add an interesting detail, that after Heracles caught the bull, he rode on its back and made it swim back to mainland Greece. Apollodorus says that once Heracles returned with the bull, Eurystheus set the animal free. The Cretan bull promptly stampeded to Sparta, and all over Arcadia before leaving southern Greece by crossing the Isthmus of Corinth, and finally ending up grazing in the meadows of Attica. Poseidon really did make a magnificent and tireless cow. For the next labor, the eighth in total, but the sixth Eurystheus is counting, the king of Mycenae gave Heracles another catch-an-animal task. But like the Cretan bull, Heracles must now go much further afield. Eurystheus told him to go to Thrace and bring back the horses belonging to a tribal leader named Diomedes. Thrace, or Thrace, is a historical region, roughly corresponding to Bulgaria and the European part of Turkey today. It doesn't seem all that distant from Greece, but in ancient times it was considered a far-off land, located on the fringes of civilization. It was a wild place, full of people the Greeks considered barbarians, who hung up human skulls on the walls of their huts. In Greek mythology, the people of Thrace were descended from the bloodthirsty god Ares. The king, Diomedes, was also himself a son of Ares. But what about his horses? With Heracles' past labors, even the catch-an-animal tasks featured animals that were special in some way. The Cretan bull was originally provided by Poseidon. The Carinidian hind had golden horns and was special to Artemis. Diomedes' horses were special, and a danger to Heracles, because they were man-eaters. All the available sources for this labor agree on this point. Diomedes made the mares fat by feeding them with the flesh of slain men. And the horses were so ferocious, their drinking troughs were made of brass, and the horses were tied down with iron chains because they were so strong. The Roman poet Hyginus says that there were four of these horses, and their names were Podargus, Lampon, Xanthus, and Dinas. In the play Alcestis, written by Euripides in 438 BC, the horses are deadly for another reason. They breathe fire out of their nostrils. Unlike some of the other labors, this one is a rare subject in Greek vase art, but there is a cup from around 520 BC showing a horse with Heracles holding its neck, while a human head and arm are sticking out of the horse's mouth. I think it's clear what the vase is trying to illustrate. To complete the labor, Heracles first had to find the horses. He made his way overland, passing through other places on his way to Diomedes' kingdom. In Euripides' play Heracles, Heracles traveled through a city in Thessaly. There, a chorus of old men warned him about the man-eating horses, and Heracles found out Diomedes was the son of Ares. This does not bother Heracles, who points out he has already killed two of the god's children. One of these children was a bandit named Cycnus, or Cygnus. When exactly Heracles killed this bandit is not clear, but Euripides implies it was before the eighth labor. In the previous episode, I mentioned how Heracles had other adventures beyond the famous 12 labors. This is one of Heracles' extra adventures that is hard to place. I'll follow Euripides' lead and say it was a side quest on Heracles' way to Thrace. The duel with the bandit is one of Heracles' oldest recorded exploits, going back even further than the earliest mentions of some of his labors. The Shield of Heracles poem from the 8th or 7th century BC is the oldest and also most detailed account of this side quest. Heracles rode in a chariot. His nephew Iolaus was his charioteer. As they traveled, the two of them came across another chariot, this one manned by Cycnus and his father, the god Ares. The two chariots circled each other. Cycnus hoped to slay Heracles. In this early poem, Heracles wears armor, and not the lion skin he more famously wore in later literature. I like this account for that reason. It's probably the only Heracles reference that has him wearing metal armor. This armor was a gift from the gods. On his legs were greaves of shining bronze, an old gift from the god Hephaestus. On his chest, a golden breastplate, a gift from the goddess Athena, received when he first started his labors. On his head, he wore a helmet, and in his arms, Heracles held a long spear and shield. Cycnus wanted the armor. He intended to kill Heracles and then strip his corpse of its armor as a prize. He challenged Heracles and Iolaus, and they agreed to fight. As he approached the opposing chariot, Athena appeared. She told Heracles that when he killed Cycnus, he was not to stop fighting to strip the man's corpse. Instead, he should remain alert, because Ares would try and kill him. Heracles and Cycnus got down from their chariots and fought a duel. Cycnus struck first but failed to penetrate Heracles' shield. Heracles drove his spear through the man's throat and killed him. As Athena warned, Ares became enraged and attacked. Athena appeared again and warned Ares, saying that he was not supposed to kill Heracles. But Ares attacked anyway. Athena used her powers to make the god's spear bend out of the way. Heracles then wounded the war god and hurled him to the ground. But Ares was saved, because his divine sons Phobos and Deimos drove Ares' chariot forward, quickly grabbed their father, and sped away. From Thessaly, Heracles continued on his way to Thrace to find Diomedes. Diodorus and Apollodorus give different accounts on how Heracles captured Diomedes' horses. Apollodorus wrote that Heracles sailed to Thrace with a band of followers, an odd detail, as Heracles normally does his labors alone and was penalized for having help with the Hydra. Once in Thrace, Apollodorus says that Heracles overpowered the Thracians looking after the horses, stole them, and drove the horses toward the sea. Diomedes and his people followed them, and Heracles and his men left the horses with a boy named Abderos, while they fought a battle against the Thracians. Diomedes was killed, and the Thracians retreated, but during the fight, Abderos was eaten by the hungry horses. In Diodorus's earlier version, there's no mention of any companions for Heracles. The hero goes to Thrace and feeds Diomedes to his own horses, which is also suggested by Pindar as early as the 5th century BC. By satisfying the horses' hunger by feeding them the flesh of the man who made them eat human flesh, Heracles caused the horses to turn tame. He then safely returned them to Eurystheus. These two versions also differ in what happened to the horses after Heracles brought them to Mycenae. Apollodorus says Eurystheus let them go. The horses wandered to Mount Olympus, where they were destroyed by the wild beasts living in the forest nearby. But Diodorus's version says Eurystheus dedicated the horses to Hera, and actually bred them with his own horses. According to later legend, Alexander the Great's horse was descended from them. The ninth labor Eurystheus gave Heracles was to fetch the belt of Hippolyta. She was the queen of the Amazons, a tribe of warrior women. It seems the ancient Greeks originally imagined these women as another strange group of people that lived at the frontiers of the known world. As time went by and the Greeks explored more, authors put the Amazons somewhere in Western Asia, often on the coast of the Black Sea. The ancient Greeks were fascinated with this tribe of fierce women, and they make appearances in a handful of their myths. This is in fact the second time we've encountered them on the pod. The first was with Bellerophon, but this one won't be the last. Apollodorus, in his telling of the ninth labor, gives some peculiar details on Amazon culture. If they ever gave birth to children, they raised the girls but exposed the boys to die. And supposedly, the Amazons pinched off their right breasts to make throwing javelins easier. This belief arose later in Greek history, and was probably based on a false understanding of what the word Amazon meant. In earlier art, the Amazons are always shown with both breasts. The Amazons, as their very warlike nature might suggest, were descended from Ares, just like the barbarian Thracians. The belt, belonging to Hippolyta, was actually Ares's zoster. This is a special type of thick leather belt, covered in bronze plates, that was commonly worn by warriors in the archaic period of Greece. The name zoster properly means war belt, so it's a piece of armor. In modern times, zoster is often translated as girdle, to make it sound more feminine. Kind of weird, really, since Hippolyta and the Amazons are not supposed to be feminine at all. Anyway, Eurystheus sends Heracles to get this divine war belt. Apollodorus says that Eurystheus, probably because he's starting to run out of ideas at this point, actually decided to send Heracles to get the belt because Eurystheus' young daughter Admete wanted it. So Heracles gathered a crew of followers and set out in a ship for the land of the Amazons. It was a land far, far away, and on the way there, Heracles went on another couple side quests. The first was on the island of Paros, one of many Greek islands. Heracles' men put ashore and found the island was inhabited by sons of King Minos of Crete. The Cretans there killed two of Heracles' men, and this infuriated him. In one of his rages, Heracles killed them where they stood, and then directed his men to besiege all of the rest of their island fortress. Eventually, after heavy fighting, the Cretans sent envoys, saying to make up for the two dead men, they would let Heracles choose any two Cretans to replace them. He agreed, and chose two, named Alcaeus and Sthenelus. This doesn't really make much sense. How could two strangers replace two of Heracles' loyal retainers? The only way it makes sense is if the followers of Heracles included in Apollodorus' version are not actually comrades, but instead a group of slaves. In that case, it would be Heracles taking two Cretans as slaves to make up for two that he is missing. Could also be that Heracles' honor is in some way linked to his number of retainers. Presumably the men would be under his protection, and so losing retainers harms his honor. Retainers serve their master, but if he can't properly protect them, he's not meeting his obligations in the social arrangement that this would entail. gaining 2 Cretans replaces his retainers, and also perhaps his lost honor. But this illustrates that Heracles is not just a questing hero. He is, as it will become more clear over time, a warlord. After leaving the island, Heracles and his men arrived in Mysia, a region in northwest Anatolia. As you can see, he's slowly getting closer to the Black Sea homeland of the Amazons. While in Mysia, Heracles stopped by the court of its king Lycus, and was entertained with a huge feast. As it happened, Lycus was in need of a little help. He was fighting a war with another group of people called the Bebryces. So it's time for another side quest. Apollodorus has Heracles join the war on the side of Lycus, kill many combatants, and then provide Lycus with the conquered land. Finally, Heracles arrived at Themiscyra. In Greek myth, this is the capital city of the Amazonian kingdom, and this fact is mentioned as early as Herodotus and Aeschylus, so somewhere around 450 BC. Apollodorus says that when Heracles arrived, Queen Hippolyta, having heard of his reputation, wanted to meet the hero. She even promised to give him her belt. Wow, that has to be the easiest labor so far, right? Heracles goes all that way, and then the queen of the warrior women just hands the treasure over. No questions asked. And most importantly, no fighting required. Well, as it happened, the goddess Hera thought the same thing, and she wasn't happy about it. Hera disguised herself as an Amazon and went around the streets of the city telling any Amazon she could find that the strange men who had arrived by boat were not friendly and were secretly planning on kidnapping the queen. The Amazons decided they were not going to let that happen, so they angrily charged up on horseback to the docks where the Greek ship was. Heracles was alerted by the shouts. He suspected treachery, so he killed Hippolyta, stripped her of her belt, and then fought the rest of the attacking Amazons. Diodorus's earlier account differs in a couple ways from Apollodorus's later one. He says Heracles arrived and demanded the war belt of Ares be handed over. The Amazons promptly ignored him. So he fought them, and Diodorus gives the names of a whole list of Amazons Heracles killed in single combat. 2 of them, Antiope and Melanippe, were taken captive. Heracles then traded Melanippe for the belt of Hippolyta. Either way, with the belt in his possession, Heracles set sail again and made his return voyage to Mycenae. But on his way back, Apollodorus has him make yet another side quest pit stop, in none other than the famous city of Troy. The city was in dire straits. Having previously offended the god Poseidon, a sea monster was terrorizing the coastline. Oracles declared that the only way to save the city was if the king chained his exposed daughter Hesione on some rocks by the sea and allowed the monster to devour her. This story sounds very similar to what happened to Perseus in Ethiopia. Here, though, Heracles didn't want marriage. He promised to slay the monster and rescue the girl if the king gave him some of Troy's famous horses. The king agreed, and Heracles killed the sea serpent. Of course, as you might expect, the king then reneged on the deal. Heracles, possibly showing some signs of restraint, left, but threatened to return one day and make the Trojans pay. Right now, he was too busy completing labors, so he hopped in his ship and took the belt of Hippolyta back to Eurystheus. For a number of these labors, listeners may have noticed that most of the main sources are often Diodorus, from the 3rd century BC, and Apollodorus, from the 2nd century AD. Some of them, like with the Mares of Diomedes, have the odd literary reference from classical Greece. But for the ones that don't, say the Cretan bull for instance, we mostly rely on images from Greek art to show that archaic and classical Greeks knew those labors of Heracles too. The next labor, though, does not have that problem at all. It may even be one of the more widely referenced labors, and those literary references run the entire span of ancient Greek history. We have some archaic epic poets, Hesiod and Eumolpus, Pindar, classical period plays by Aeschylus, and history books by Herodotus, our usual contributors Diodorus and Apollodorus, and also a couple Roman poets too. This labor, the 10th in my list so far, is Heracles' attempt to retrieve the cattle of Geryon. But who is this Geryon? For that, I'll have to back up a moment and provide some context. And I have to back up a fair bit to the exact moment the hero Perseus managed to chop off the Gorgon Medusa's head. When that happened, as I mentioned in the Perseus episodes, two things were born out of Medusa's severed neck. One was the winged horse Pegasus, which I explained what happened to in the Bellerophon episode. But the other being, born out of the neck, was a man named Chrysaor. There isn't a whole lot known about this Chrysaor. His name means golden sword. His father is generally interpreted as being Poseidon, since, as I went over in the Medusa episode, there are clear indications that they had some sort of sexual interaction. Chrysaor was apparently a favorite of the god Ares, but we don't know why. He's described as stout-hearted, and I assume he went on adventures of some sort, but they don't survive to us today. But as early as Hesiod's Theogony, in the 8th or 7th century BC, he was given a family. Chrysaor's partner was Caleroe, one of the 50 Oceanids, the nymph daughters of the Titan Oceanus. Their son was Geryon, who is going to face Heracles in this latest labor. Geryon is a monster, but he's a very human-like monster. Nevertheless, his physical form is open to interpretation. Hesiod calls him triple-headed. He's a man with three heads, and Hesiod says he is the most powerful of all mortal men. There's a 6th century BC statue of him that also shows him in this way, with two extra heads sprouting from his shoulders. At the same time, there is another way to describe Geryon. Instead of triple-headed, Geryon is triple-bodied, with the numbers of heads, arms, and legs equal to three people. The first recorded description of this is by one of the 9 great lyric poets, Stesichorus, who also gives Geryon wings. The Athenian playwright Aeschylus, in one of his lost play fragments, also has Geryon as triple-bodied, wielding 3 spears in his right hands, and in his left ones, 3 shields, and wearing 3 crested helmets on his 3 heads. This seems to also be the typical way to show him in classical vase art. Most examples I've seen show Geryon as 3 soldiers drawn in profile, with their bodies over top of each other. So is Geryon an example of conjoined triplets? That's certainly what Apollodorus thinks several centuries later. For him, Geryon had the bodies of 3 men joined into one at the belly, but splitting into 3 again from the thighs down. But in another play, Aeschylus makes an offhand comment, suggesting Geryon might have separate bodies, with each having a different death, so not conjoined twins, but instead 3 distinct people. Diodorus takes this rationalization further. His Geryon, instead, is 3 sons of Chrysaor, who fight against Heracles together and are the leaders of 3 big, fierce armies. Rationalizations aside, it seems the 3-headed or 3-bodied nature of Geryon were the usual forms, and neither really won out over the other. Even in Roman times, Ovid said he had 3 heads, while Virgil said 3 bodies. And both of those poets live roughly along the same times as each other. In art, we get examples of both, but never an image showing 3 separate people. In myth, Geryon lived in Eurythia, which was an island located far to the west on the edge of the great big ocean river surrounding the world. In the earliest surviving sources, this is purely a mythical location. But as time went by, it was identified with Spain, or somewhere near it. On this island, Geryon lived with a herd of special crimson-colored cattle. He looked after them, but he also had help from a cattle herder named Eurytion and a guard dog named Orthus. This guard dog is no normal dog. It's the brother of Cerberus, the Hound of Hades, and like its brother, it had multiple heads. It's also one of the monstrous offspring of Typhon, so once again, like with the Nemean lion and the Hydra, Heracles is going to deal with them. So, how did Heracles reach Eurythia, since it's near the edge of the world? According to the archaic poets Eumelus and Stesichorus, classical playwright Aeschylus, and Roman period Apollodorus, Heracles borrowed a golden bowl, or cauldron, from the god Helios. He didn't use it to make a meal. He used it as a boat, and sailed the bowl all the way to the island at the edge of the world. In one version, he shot an arrow at the sun god, because he was feeling hot, and then got the bowl given to him afterwards. Once he reached Eurythia, the real fun began. First, the guard dog Orthus smelled him, and came to investigate. Heracles struck it with a club and killed the multi-headed creature. A bit underwhelming, but you could say Heracles had gotten used to fighting the offspring of Typhon by now. The herdsman, Eurytion, heard the dog's yelping cries and came to help, but Heracles killed him too. As Heracles began to lead the cattle away, Apollodorus has Geryon then arrive, and Heracles killed him with arrows. In another version, Heracles dashes out Geryon's brains with his club. The three heads were cast into the dust, and the monster's blood sprayed onto the corpses of Orthus and Eurytion. And with that, Heracles loaded the cattle into Helios' bowl. Must have been a very big bowl, and he sailed back across the ocean. Before leaving Geryon, I want to quickly cover the work of Stesichorus, because it provides a very interesting take on the monster. In the 6th century BC, Stesichorus wrote a poem which is all about Geryon. Unusually, it's called Geryonius, literally named for the monster, unlike most other Greek poems that are named for heroes. And that might give a hint as to why this poem is so special. The poem survives in a series of fragments, but it's enough to tell the rough plot. First, the gods meet in council, and it is agreed that Geryon, even though he's the son of an immortal, is doomed to die. There's a hint of an argument before this is decided, with Poseidon being against the death of Geryon. But Athena reminds Poseidon of a now unknown promise, and tells him he can't save the man. Later in the poem, there are at least two descriptions of people warning Geryon, including from his mother, about facing Heracles as he leads the cattle away. But Geryon ignores the warnings and accepts his fate. He has a powerful speech, which roughly goes like this. "Do not talk of chilling death to frighten my manly heart. For if I am by birth immortal and ageless, and will share in life on Olympus, then it is better to endure and watch my cattle being driven off far from my stalls. But if I must indeed reach hateful old age and spend my life among short-lived mortals, far from the blessed gods, then it is much nobler for me to suffer what is my fate than to avoid death and shower disgrace on my children." Geryon decides he is not immortal, and so should die in a blaze of glory. He chases after Heracles, and the fight between Geryon and Heracles is detailed. Geryon kept his shield in front of his chest, but Heracles struck one of his heads with a stone. His plumed helmet fell off with a clatter. Heracles then pulled out one of his arrows, poisoned with the Hydra's venom, and quietly stuck it into Geryon's uncovered forehead. The sharp point cut through the flesh and bones until it held straight on the crown of his head. Blood gushed down and stained his limbs and breastplate. Geryon's head drooped to one side, and he withered like a poppy shedding its petals. It's a graphic scene, but at its end, Geryon is not a monster whose death is celebrated. In this poem, he's a victim with whom we sympathize. At this point, according to Apollodorus, Heracles has been performing his labors for over 8 years. Heracles returned from the edge of the world with the cattle of Geryon, and fought some bandits along the way. When he got back to Tiryns, Eurystheus decided to send Heracles right back to the edge of the world. This time, he was sent to retrieve the golden apples of the Hesperides. These apples were special. Gaia gave them to Hera as a wedding gift. The tree bearing the apples was in the care of the Hesperides, a group of nymphs, and guarded by a 100-headed serpent monster. The Hesperides themselves were sometimes the daughters of Nyx, the primeval night goddess. This is what Hesiod says in the 8th century BC. Sometimes they were the siblings of the Gorgons, and in other places, they were the daughters of the Titan Atlas, which is the case in the later periods. Usually they were three in number, but Apollodorus lists four. The Hesperides were usually said to live in the far west, but Heracles needed to learn the exact location. Wandering around, Heracles found some other nymphs and they led him to Nereus, the old man of the sea. He had to sneak up on Nereus while he slept, and then grab him. When the god shapeshifted into a variety of different forms to escape, Heracles had to keep a hold of him until the god tired. At that point, Heracles promised Nereus he would let him go if he told him how to find the Hesperides. With Nereus' directions, Heracles' next road trip was ready to begin. On the way, Heracles ended up in Libya, the ancient Greek term for northern Africa. There he encountered a son of Poseidon, named Antaeus. Antaeus was one of those occasional psychopaths in Greek mythology who enjoys murdering random people. In his case, he challenged them to a wrestling contest first. Antaeus couldn't normally lose, because as long as he kept touching the ground, he would not lose his strength. Heracles wrestled him, hugged him close, and lifted Antaeus into the air. With his contact with the ground broken, Antaeus lost his strength, and Heracles crushed him to death. Next, Apollodorus has Heracles visit Egypt, and encounter a king named Busiris, who was another son of Poseidon. Again, we have the murdering of visitors. In Busiris's case, he captures strangers and kills them in a human sacrifice. Heracles, when he arrived, was tied up, dragged to the bloody altar, but before the knife cut his throat, he broke his bonds and killed Busiris. This story is recorded by the later sources for Greek myth. The earliest person to reference it is the classical period historian Herodotus. Funny enough, he does not like this story, and says it is one of the silliest things the Greeks believe. At some point, Heracles ended up in the Caucasus Mountains. Now, something I don't understand about Apollodorus' version is why. You may have noticed that after talking to Nereus, Heracles has gone from Libya to Egypt to the Caucasus. He moved east. But why is he going east when the Hesperides are supposed to be in the far west? He's going in the complete opposite direction. I can think of a couple reasons why this might be. First, maybe Heracles is traveling east because he has to do something in the east first before he can go west to the Hesperides. If this is the case, it's possible he was only following Nereus' instructions, which are not specifically recorded. Second, maybe the Hesperides are not located in the far west. In Apollodorus' version, they're linked with the Hyperboreans, a people who normally live in the far north. Maybe traveling to all these places in the east is Heracles' way of wrapping around the edges of the known world and then heading to the Hyperboreans. Finally, a third possible reason is these side quests Heracles is performing on his way to the Hesperides, maybe they are late additions to the story. Maybe the Greek writers at this point were trying to place these adventures in the unwieldy chronology of Heracles' life, and not doing a particularly good job of it. I'm not entirely sure which reason, if any, could be right, but I think what happens next could suggest the first one. In the Caucasus Mountains, Heracles found the old Titan Prometheus. I covered Prometheus way back in the fifth episode of the podcast. In the distant days when Zeus was reorganizing the universe after taking over from the Titans, Prometheus got on his bad side. Prometheus was a champion for the early humans and went against some of Zeus's wishes in advocating for them. His punishment was being chained to a rock, identified with a mountain in the Caucasus, and every day an eagle would come, tear him open, and devour his liver, which would grow back for the whole thing to happen again the next day. That continued day after day, until Heracles arrived and killed the eagle with arrows. In return for saving him, Prometheus told Heracles that when he reached the Garden of the Hesperides, he was not to go into the garden himself. Instead, he should persuade the Titan Atlas to retrieve the apples for him. With that advice, Heracles presumably left the Caucasus and traveled to the far west of the world and found Atlas. After the defeat of the Titans, Atlas was not sent to Tartarus with the others. Instead, he was made to hold up the sky. Heracles found Atlas and told him his need for help. To get Atlas to agree, Heracles offered to hold the sky while he helped him. Free from his punishment, Atlas went into the garden and brought back the apples, and then told Heracles he would deliver the apples to Eurytheus himself, leaving Heracles to hold up the sky. But Heracles knew Atlas would just try and double-cross him, and following Prometheus' advice, he told Atlas that he just needed to take a break and put a pad on his head first. So Atlas took back the sky, allowing Heracles to take his needed break. Of course, Heracles just grabbed the golden apples from where they lay at Atlas' feet and set off back home. It's honestly a silly part of the story. Would Atlas really be that stupid? Sure enough, there are other versions that don't mention Atlas at all. They say that Heracles killed the apple's guardian serpent himself, and left the serpent's still quivering corpse behind him. According to Apollodorus, when Heracles returned to Tiryns and gave the golden apples to Eurytheus, the king gave them back to the hero, who then gave them to Athena to return to the Garden of the Hesperides because no mortal should ever possess them. And now it's time for Heracles' final labor. Eurystheus had him clean, kill monsters, and capture formidable beasts. He was sent to retrieve fabulous objects, he traveled all across Greece, and even traveled abroad. In all of these, Heracles was successful. He accomplished seemingly impossible tasks, and even went to the edges of the earth. Twice, in fact. Eurystheus had one final labor to give, and he was going to make sure Heracles traveled further than he had ever traveled before, to beyond one final frontier, to leave Earth itself. No, Eurystheus was not sending him to space. He was sending Heracles to the underworld. Heracles' final labor was to travel to the home of Hades and bring back the only remaining child of Typhon that had not already been killed. This was Cerberus, the guard dog of the underworld. Like with the cattle of Geryon, this labor is widely referenced by multiple ancient Greek sources from across different time periods. The earliest reference is in Homer's Odyssey. Eurystheus thought this final task would be impossible. It presents two key problems Heracles will need to overcome. The most obvious one is the ferocity of Cerberus. Make no mistake, Cerberus was not some dog that you could throw a bone to. He was very much a monster. Back in the Hades episode, I talked about how the ancient Greeks' conception of him shifted over time. Originally, in the archaic and early classical periods, he was very much a monster, with a multitude of heads, ranging from 50 to 100. I suggested the usual representation of him as having 3 or even 2 heads was probably just because it was easier to draw him that way. But either way, he is a dangerous guard dog. After all, it's his job to keep the dead in the underworld, and you're going to need something especially savage to scare away those that are already dead and have nothing to lose. The other problem Heracles must face with this labor is how to even get to the underworld. It's not like he could just hop on a boat and sail there. But the thing is, I can't tell you exactly how he got there. The sources aren't very consistent. Homer gives us the earliest reference. He tells us Heracles had the help of Hermes and Athena, but nothing about how they actually got him there. But luckily for Heracles, there were a couple different entrances to the underworld. In fact, we've already heard about one. Back when Heracles fought the Hydra, there was an entrance somewhere nearby, maybe sunk in the depths of Lake Lerna. Did Heracles dive down and swim to the underworld? I think it's a cool idea, and it would take Heracles almost in a full circle, back to his earlier labors. But I'm really just making this up. No, Apollodorus and some others have Heracles use a different entrance. This one located at the most southern part of mainland Greece, in a cave near a place called Taenarum. But before heading there, he first went to Eleusis to be initiated into Demeter's mystery cult. This cult centered around the myths about how Hades abducted Demeter's daughter Persephone and took her to the underworld, and how Persephone was able to return for a part of every year. It's not super clear why it was necessary for Heracles to be initiated, but presumably it helped him gain access to the underworld, or maybe even survive the underworld in some way. In a play by Euripides, Heracles tells his father witnessing the rites helped him in his fight with Cerberus. After his initiation, according to Apollodorus, Heracles went to Taenarum and descended into the cave there. Hermes accompanied him on the way, and Athena probably too. Soon he reached the underworld and began to wander through it. When the dead souls saw him, they ran away, except for two, the hero Meleager, who I have not talked about on the pod yet, but will talk about in the near future, and the Gorgon Medusa. Heracles drew his sword to fight the Gorgon, but Hermes told him not to bother, as the Gorgon couldn't hurt him because it was only an empty phantom. Continuing on, Heracles found two heroes trapped in the underworld. These were Theseus and Pirithous. I haven't covered their stories yet, so I won't explain right now why they were in the underworld, but Heracles tried to rescue them. He was able to rescue Theseus, but in most versions, Pirithous was left behind. Next, Heracles came to another underworld inhabitant. This one was Ascalaphus. He was an immortal, but Heracles found him stuck under a large rock. The rock was a punishment, because many years before, when Persephone had first been taken to the underworld by Hades, it was Asclepius who told the god she ate the pomegranate seeds, and so could not permanently leave. Heracles found him and rolled the rock away, setting the man free. The Greek underworld is a dark and dreary place, and the souls that stay there are hinted to be very hungry. In Homer's Odyssey, they enthusiastically drink any blood provided to them. In Apollodorus's account of Heracles' final labor, the hero slaughters one of Hades' cows and left its blood for them to eat. But Menoetes, the guardian of Hades' cattle, challenged Heracles to a wrestling contest after he slaughtered one of the cows. This probably wasn't the smartest move, as Heracles grabbed him around the waist and broke some of his ribs. At this point, Heracles arrived at the house of Hades. Diodorus says he was welcomed like a brother by Persephone. Apollodorus says Heracles asked Hades for Cerberus, and Hades told him he could take the dog if he subdued it without weapons. Heracles found Cerberus, and like with so many beasts he'd faced already, he wrestled with it. He flung his arms around the head of the dog, and even though he was bitten, he never relaxed his grip and pressure until it yielded. In some versions, Heracles is simply given the dog to take away, because the rulers of the underworld were already impressed with him getting that far. Euripides was likely aware of both of these versions, since in his play Heracles, he has Heracles' father ask the hero if he conquered Cerberus in a fight or was given him by Persephone. Heracles answers that he fought the dog, aligning with the description I just shared from Apollodorus. The Roman poet Seneca says something very similar. He says Heracles beat the dog into submission with his club. Afterwards, Hades and Persephone, having witnessed Heracles' godlike strength, shivered on their thrones and allowed him to lead Cerberus away. After winning Cerberus, Heracles returned to the land of the living, but the sources don't agree on where exactly. Some say he exited back out of the cave at Taenarin. Interestingly, others do not have him return the way he came, but come back up at a different spot. Apollodorus and Pausanias say Trozen, which is fairly close to Tiryns in Mycenae. According to Pausanias, there was a temple there dedicated to the underworld gods. Ovid says they returned far to the east of Greece, in the barbarian lands of Scythia, and then had to make their way back. And several other ancient Greeks give various other locations. With his final labor now complete, Heracles took his time returning to Eurystheus. Several sources have him parade the captured Cerberus throughout the Argolid. Women and children lined the streets and watched with fear. Men greeted Heracles with laurels and sung him praises as he passed. Finally, Heracles arrived back at Tiryns and showed Eurystheus the multi-headed guard dog of the underworld. Admitting Heracles had now completed all his assigned labors, he asked Heracles to carry the dog back to Hades. And with that, Heracles' 12 labors were complete. According to the Oracle of Delphi, Heracles had now properly compensated for the murder of his family so many years before. Along the way, he fought some of Greek mythology's most dangerous monsters, and traveled all over Greek mythology's supernatural world. In some versions, Heracles' reward for completing the labors is not just forgiveness, but also immortality after his death. But that's a far way off for now. Heracles has many more adventures to go on. Next episode, I'll cover Heracles' exploits after the labors. And that's all for today. If you're enjoying this podcast, please share it with a friend who would enjoy it too. As always, thank you for listening.